Welcome to the podcast. We're here today with David Epstein, ProPublica reporter, and we're going to talk a little bit about the fascinating and exploding field of athletes doping and the scientists who try to catch them. Welcome, David.
Thank you.
So the news this week is that Tyson Gay has acknowledged what was obvious, which is that he had doped before the Olympics and has given back his silver medal. What's the broader significance of this story?
I think the broader significance right now is the fact that his penalty is just 1 year and sort of counting time that he's set out already. That means he's eligible to compete again next month. And so in the Olympic sports world, this has sort of been met with befuddlement for how this guy who used steroids, you know, that were listed on the label of a product that he used, can be competing, not have missed an Olympic year, not have missed a World Championships year, and basically just taking a little bit of time off, really.
So let's get into the sort of science of this thing a little bit. I think it's important to understand, how doping works and what people do to try to catch it. So how many people annually are caught doping?
Annually, so around the world, about 1.5% of the World Anti-Doping Agency's tests turn up positive. And so it's usually around the world you're talking about in the dozens, basically.
Is that everybody?
No, it's not even close. I mean, WADA themselves, I think, conservatively estimates that they're only getting 10%. Of dopers, and I think that's probably in the ballpark.
So let's break it down. You got a guy like, let's say, a Tyson Gay who's taken a banned substance, and they test his blood. What are they looking for?
Well, they're looking for a whole range of things, depending on in blood and urine. They could be looking for, first of all, just the metabolites of known illegal substances and steroids, which are just analogs of testosterone. They could be looking for an elevated ratio of testosterone to another hormone called epitestosterone. They could be looking for synthetic versions of natural substances like human growth hormone or testosterone itself.
Well, that sounds a little bit tricky. So you're looking in someone's blood or urine and you see something that is actually belongs there, let's say testosterone, and it's just there maybe in a little bit of an excess quantity. But don't some people have excess quantities?
That's right. Some people do have excess quantities. And to make it even more difficult, when you're looking for this urinary excretion of excess testosterone, some people, just because of their genetics, never have an excess in their urine. So they can inject as much as they want, and you won't see that in their urine profile. So those people are simply sort of immune to the most common drug testing.
So what do they try to do? How do you deal with this problem, which is you're looking for a natural substance and you've got these genetic variations among people? So what's the answer?
In some cases, there's no good answer at the moment. So one of the, I don't know if you remember the deer antler spray controversy in the NFL, the controversial component of that product was insulin-like growth factor 1, which is actually what athletes take human growth hormone for to boost that. And there's no drug test that can distinguish synthetic insulin-like growth factor 1 from natural, period. You can't detect it. The only way to get someone for using it is through intelligence gathering. And that's where anti-doping is headed now, through turning athletes who fail tests into informants. And that's what happened with Tyson Gay, and that's why he has a reduced ban of 1 year.
Well, who do they inform on?
They have to inform on people other than themselves. In this case, I've been told by people with knowledge of the investigation that Tyson Gay has given information on NFL players, his own former coach, John Drummond, who's a USA track and field official, the chiropractor who provided him the substance, as well as other track athletes.
So we're in a kind of, sounds a little bit like chasing terrorists around the world. We're trying to develop spies and sources and give people deals to cooperate. But let's go back to the science. Let's say that you, I happen to know, David, that you're an amateur runner and you decide that actually you'd like to be in the Olympics and you're going to dope to do this. Can you get away with it?
I could, yes, because I know how the testing works very well. I know how the drugs work very well. So if you told me I was going to be tested this time tomorrow, I could dope right now and I would pass most of the tests that you would give me, because I would dope with small amounts. I would dope with certain products that are fast acting. So I would have my testosterone spike a couple hours from now and it would be down and I would look clean when you tested me tomorrow.
And I assume the assumption here is that that's exactly what's going on throughout sports.
That's definitely what the brighter athletes are doing. So, you know, you'll see even some of the anti-doping scientists saying doping tests are often IQ tests, not anti-doping tests. That said, there's some great technology that is limiting the amount of doping. So it's sort of hemming dopers into certain strategies. So there's, in many cases, I would say doping is somewhat less extreme than it used to be, for sure.
Do you think the prospects are there for this intelligence-based approach to work? I mean, given the fact that you're describing a testing regimen that's unlikely to catch people, why would we, you know, be able to turn people if so few of them are being caught?
I do think so. So they just have to make the most of those rare circumstances. And in fact, the most high-profile anti-doping cases have been based on intelligence gathering. Belko, right? Marion Jones passed 160 tests. Lance Armstrong passed way more than that. These cases were all based on intelligence gathering, right? And not just for the athletes. Coaches are not subject to drug testing at all. Lance Armstrong might have failed a test. He could have been caught in other ways. But Johan Brunel, who was the director of the postal team, only was sanctioned with a decade-long ban because athletes on the postal team decided to inform on him in return for six-month sentences, even though they acknowledged doping. So finally, this is a move to go after the support staff and the coaches, who are really the infrastructure in many cases behind doping, rather than just doing sort of what one anti-doping official told me is whack-a-mole and getting, you know, one athlete that you catch in a test here and there.
I know this has come up, but I'd love to hear your response to it. I mean, is there any argument at all for just throwing up your hands and in essence, legalizing everything, olly-olly and free, you know, just try to build the best superhuman being you can with whatever drugs are available?
That's a good question. And the leagues themselves, I often hear people saying, well, baseball should just allow steroids. Well, you know, they're not actually allowed for that use in the United States, so it's not like baseball can make that decree, but they could just look the other way. And to me,
we did try that for a while.
Yeah, right, exactly. To me, I guess the core values of sports emanate from taking agreed upon rules and following them, whether you agree with them or not. It's sports are the ultimate human contrivances, right? Take agreed upon rules, add meaning. And without those agreed upon rules, I think you sort of have nothing left. And I don't think people would be as easy to take that kind of principle to any other aspect of society. Like, should we just allow bankers to cheat, you know, as long as we don't see it? So I would say no.
Well, and I guess another part of this is at some point then the athletic competition becomes less about willpower and training and more about who can hire the best scientists.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what happened in cycling, basically. And also, you know, even beyond the sports realm, I now know a lot of these raw components for drugs that athletes use come through the same pipelines that much more nefarious drugs and criminals use. Also, I think the worst thing that's come out of doping is that some drugs like human growth hormone that might have legitimate purposes for research are over-restricted by Congress because of the bad name that athletes have given it. And that is disastrous, and that goes way beyond sports. And I think this move toward intelligence gathering and shutting down pipelines will actually do some good beyond sports if it works.
As a fan, I'm just curious about one last question for you, David, because I know you've covered this for a number of years. What happens to a guy like, let's say, A-Rod, who has boosted his performance for many years with these drugs? Presumably when he comes back after suspension, he'll have to live without them. Can they ever get back to where they were?
I wouldn't say presumably he'll have to live without them when he comes back, because you might have said that after the first time he tested positive,
right? I did, actually, yes.
So there's that. But no, he won't be as good with half the testosterone as he would be with twice as much testosterone. You know, he might still have a lot of skills. He might be able to compensate for strength with some other things. But, you know, there's a reason they use those drugs.
David Epstein, thank you very much.
Thank you.